Charlotte Green's Culture Club on Classic FM.
I'm Charlotte Green, and I'm joined on Classic FM by the pianist and composer Stephen Huff. Stephen, welcome to the Culture Club.
Thanks, Charlotte.
You've got a new album, Grieg's Lyric Pieces, coming out on May the 5th. Why did you decide to concentrate on Grieg?
Well, I've loved these pieces ever since I was a child, and I find it fascinating. You know, composers, we all know, of course, about the great composers, yes. And there's a big long list of them, but there are composers who are not second rate, but maybe second rank. And I think Grieg is one of those. No one, I think, could, except maybe Grieg's relatives, could claim Grieg was in the same company as Bach and Brahms and Beethoven and so on. But Grieg had a unique voice. He was an original. And already that's saying more than you can for a lot of composers. And I think in these lyric pieces, which span most of his life, I think there's something very magical. There's something nostalgic. There's something melancholy often about the music, and tender too.
Now, you've included the Nocturne, which you often play as an encore, don't you? And I wondered, what is it about that piece in particular that appeals to you?
I think it's an exquisite piece of music.
Beautiful.
It is absolutely glorious. But it also goes deep back to my childhood, because I remember hearing this. Now, I think it was a TV series called The Railway Children from the famous book. And I remember hearing the theme music for this and thinking, what is that gorgeous piece? And I didn't find it for a number of years. And when I did find it, it was very magical. So it's a little bit of my childhood. But I think it's also a little bit of Grieg's older life. It's towards the end of his life the piece was written. It's not an early piece. And you hear a little quote from the piano concerto, which was an early piece. And I have this sort of thought that perhaps the piece has a certain regret to it, because if Grieg had died after writing the piano concerto, I think you might have expected him to be one of the greatest. Because to me,
interesting. Yeah.
The piece, the piano concerto, is extraordinarily original. Mm. It's incredibly well-conceived, well-constructed, full of the most wonderful tunes and passion and glitter and intimacy. But I think one could say that he didn't quite live up to the expectation that piece suggests. And I don't know whether, just quoting the concerto at the end of his life, this Nocturne, there's something of a sort of whimsy about it. Maybe things might have gone in a different direction for me.
A sense of regret, perhaps, yes.
Possibly. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. But there's certainly a sadness to the piece. And it's also always interesting to hear pieces in the major key that are sad.
What is it about Grieg's music, do you think, that stands out as being particularly Scandinavian?
That's an interesting question, and I'm not sure whether we put that construct on the music after having heard it, or whether it's the other way around. It's probably the link with folk music, in the same way that what makes Vaughan Williams sound English. There's something in that root that goes deep into history that gives music that kind of flavour. Again, what makes Albanith Spanish?
Yes.
It's the link with the Moorish influences, I think. And so the same with English music and the same with Norwegian music.
Now, one of the pieces that is on the CD is Wedding Day at Trollhagen, which is a great favourite with the Classic FM audience.
Yeah.
And I'm delighted to say it is on the CD. I wondered why you chose that particular piece.
Well, I think it's one of the best of the set. It's one of the longest as well.
Yes.
I think it's a brilliant construction. You have these outer sections that are full of the joy that you have at a wedding, with and tremendous rhythmic propulsion, doesn't it?
Yat-da-dee, yes, very much so.
Which I like to play a little bit held, you know, as if it's somebody stamping their feet. You know, there's a very rustic,
yes,
earthy, peasant-like quality to that in every good sense. You know, the life on the earth, working with the farm, growing food that you eat that keeps you and your family alive. I think there's very much that side of it, which, of course, is part of what getting married would have been all about, a family and everything.
Yes.
But then you have this middle section, which is, it's again Grieg with a certain sort of, I don't know whether it's sad, but there's something incredibly tender about that middle section. That piece is an example, I think, of why all of these lyric pieces are so touching. They're very, it's very honest music. You know, there's no artifice about it in a way. It comes right from the heart.
Stephen, not only are you a concert pianist and a composer, but you also write prose and you're a painter, so you're very much a Renaissance man. How do you balance the competing demands of all those aspects of your work?
Well, I suppose there's a sort of hierarchy of importance in my life to these things. I mean, playing the piano is what I do most, and composing is a very important part of my life. Whether it's important to other people, I don't know, but it is to me. The other things I tuck in when I can. The prose is something I've always done since I was a kid. I've always loved words, and it was always my favourite subject at school, even more than music, actually, really. Writing, and I do that when I can. Painting is something that I feel like a kid when I'm doing it, because I don't have any pretensions to it.
Is that very liberating?
Oh, it's tremendously liberating.
I could imagine.
I really let rip when I... I wish I had a bigger studio so that I could throw even more paint on even bigger canvases.
Do you paint in oils?
Acrylic, actually,
right,
now.
Yes.
Partly because I'd like to work in oils, but it's more time-consuming, and acrylics, it's possible to do something quickly.
Yes, yes.
Even in hotel rooms, I've done pieces actually on the floor of hotels, spreading out newspapers so that I don't get paint on the carpet.
But that really is a good use of your time. You must be quite disciplined.
I'm sort of disciplined and not disciplined. I can be incredibly lazy. It's very easy for me to waste a couple of hours doing really nothing and having a sort of vacant time. But I think once I start to do something, I do focus in and get things done quickly. So with writing, I've done quite a lot of journalism over the last few years for The Telegraph and in other places. And once I've got an idea and a sort of deadline, then I can sort of just go in and not take my head up or my pen off the paper until it's finished. And so that, I think, helps. And the same with musical things. I do sort of focus.
The concentration is really good.
Yeah. Yes. I think you sort of have to, in a way, because things have to be done. And it's also practice. A lot of things, I think, are practice. People say, oh, I can't write. But actually, anyone who can literally read and write can actually write an essay. Mm. It may not be the best essay ever written, but it's a technique, writing essays, as is composing. Anyone who can read music can write music. And I think a lot of people say, oh, I can't write, because they feel they can't write Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. But, you know, there's a lot...
That's very true.
There are Greek lyric pieces to be written by a lot of people who feel they don't have the ability to do so. And I think... it's quite important, and I think in education too, to liberate people, not to be cocky in a self-confident way, but to have a sort of a feeling that, well, I don't need to be ashamed of something that I've done, even if it isn't the greatest thing that I've done. And I think from that liberation comes a very healthy way of looking at art and music generally.
Stephen, how do you cope with pre-performance nerves? Because presumably performing live can be incredibly stressful.
Yes, it can. I'm not sure I've got the final solution to that. And I find it's different every time. I don't feel that there's a certain feeling of nervousness which is the same at every concert. There are good nerves, of course. There are nerves when you're excited and you know that anxiety will dissipate as soon as you start playing.
Yes. In fact, you have to have nerves, don't you? Because otherwise it would be a very flat performance.
Absolutely. You need that kind of adrenaline to get going. And, I mean, I'm sure for you too, when the red light goes on, there's
very much so,
something...
You snap to attention,
And I think we all need that moment. But then there are the bad nerves when it's a kind of a jittery feeling, which is not a good nerves. It feels like the dissipation is actually in you and somehow...
Yes.
And that does happen sometimes. It's very unpredictable. You can begin a performance being quite relaxed and then suddenly see a microphone or think of something or feel uncomfortable.
And that can trigger
nerves happening in the middle or even towards the end of a performance. Again, it's partly discipline, it's partly practice, and it's partly, I think, just, you know, these sort of variables are part of being human. And so they're good. You know, it's good to have foibles. It's good not to have everything completely in control.
Stephen, you didn't come from a particularly musical background, did you?
No.
I just wonder who were the pianists and performers who inspired you when you were growing up?
Well, it's interesting. In a sense, maybe it's a good thing, because we had no classical records in the house at all when I started learning the piano. But once I did, my parents, and particularly my father, was very keen on exploring music himself, and he amassed an incredible knowledge in a very short space of time, much more than I did. And right from Monteverdi to Stockhausen, he loved and was fascinated in everything, and he was instantly able to identify Haitink's Bruckner from Jochem's Bruckner. And I mean, it was a very sophisticated... Obviously, he was a sponge waiting to be made full. But one of the first records they bought was one called Keyboard Giants of the Past that RCA brought out in the 60s. And that was the record I loved the most. And on that record was playing by Rachmaninoff and Cortot and Gabrilowitsch and Paderewski. And from that very beginning until this very morning, those are the pianists that still inspire me the most. So that style of playing was always something closest to my heart, and, yes, and it began from the start.
Stephen, you're performing at the Festival Hall later this month on April the 28th, and it's a programme of Debussy and Chopin.
That's right, yes. It's actually a sandwich, because I begin with Debussy, then I play the four ballades of Chopin, separated by the interval in the middle, and then I play more Debussy at the end. So it's a kind of an exploration of how related they are in many ways, and yet how completely different.
We've mentioned that you also compose music, and you've written a mass, haven't you, that's coming out at roughly the same time as the Grieg lyric pieces. I wonder if you could talk about that. It's with Andrew Litton and the Colorado Symphony Orchestra.
That's right. Well, it was originally commissioned a number of years ago by Westminster Cathedral for organ and choir. And when I was writing it, I there were a number of moments when I felt I really would like an orchestra, and not just 30 singers, but 130 singers. So that's exactly what we have with Colorado. I orchestrated it, actually, for the Indianapolis Symphony.
Yes,
they commissioned the orchestration. And then it was recorded by Andrew Litton last year in live concerts, and they did such a wonderful job. And I think we're going to hear the Gloria, which I think is an example of why I needed more than just an organ to get out what I wanted to do with this piece.
Stephen, thank you very much indeed for coming in to talk to me.
Thanks, Charlotte.